Chair Ehrman, we are recording and broadcasting. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Okay, good morning. My name is Kenneth Ehrman, and I'm the chair of the California Boating and Waterways Commission. Today, I'll be chairing the Boating and Waterways Commission meeting. With that, I call to order the February 10th, 2022 Commission meeting. This meeting is being held virtually on Zoom. As a reminder to everyone, this meeting is a live broadcast and can be viewed at www.calspan.org. And the archived video will be also be available at calspan.org website. Before we start with the reports on today's agenda, please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Please begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America
and
to the Republic. Which stands,
one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and
justice for all.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to ask Megan Russell to take the roll call for the commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. See here. Okay. Going to start with Commissioner Murillo of Coronado, California.
I'm here.
Present.
Good morning.
Good morning. Commissioner Peer of San Francisco, California.
Present.
Present. Good morning. Vice Chair Hawkins of Truckee, California.
Present.
Present. Good morning. Chair Kenneth Ehrman of Oxnard, California.
I'm here. Present.
Present. Thank you. And Commissioner Pettibone of Sacramento, California. Absent. And okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Megan. Now an introduction of the commission staff and local dignitaries. State Parks Department of Boating and Waterways staff. Was Director Quintero able to join at this time?
No, Mr. Chair, he will not be joining.
And Chief Deputy Director Liz McGurk is unable at this time too, correct?
That is correct.
Correct.
Also, we have Ramona Fernandez, the Acting Deputy Director of Boating and Waterways.
Morning.
And we have Catherine Tobias, Legal Counsel for the Department of Parks and Recreation.
Good morning.
Okay, thank you. Now for the commission activities updates. I'm going to call each commissioner and we'll have an update on what your activities are since the last meeting. And I'll start with Commissioner Rudy Murillo.
Let me unmute this. I just have a question here regarding the calendar really quickly. I have the funding committee virtual meeting for Thursday the 17th at 10 a.m. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, very good. I have nothing more at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Murillo. Commissioner Peer?
Oh, good morning, everyone. Since our last full commission meeting, we've had two what I consider to be very productive, very informative, and very engaged meetings of the subcommittee on program development. And so I would like to just really commend all of the participants who spent a lot of time not only informing me, but also just trimming a lot of information, both historical and prospectively about the various programs, specifically invasive species and beach replenishment. But also, you know, we haven't worked through it quite yet. So I think we've had some extraordinarily productive sessions. Secondly, I will say that I've undertaken, even though I'm 59, so I'm not legally required to do it, I've undertaken getting the California Boater Card and engaging in that educational process. And I will say that I found it to be a very seamless process of working through to a from the Boating and Waterways Division website through to a free provider of the informational content. I haven't finished it yet, but I've started it, and I just want to really commend whoever it is who is running that program, that it's very seamless. And so that's my update.
Thank you for that, Commissioner Peer. Commissioner, Vice Chair Hawkins.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, everyone. Vice Chair Hawkins here. This is my first real meeting since the summer. I was on maternity leave, so I appreciate the commission's support while I was gone. Similar to some of my other commissioners, I am chairing the subcommittee on alternative funding. We did have a kickoff meeting here right before the holidays, mid-December, and it was really an opportunity to get to know the other subcommittee members and take an initial intake audit of kind of where we can go and develop a work plan. Our team is going to be reconnecting, meeting again next week with Commissioner Murillo, so I expect that to be a productive meeting. And then here from the heart of the Sierra Nevada, we're waiting for winter. Still, we had quite a robust December. However, it's been pretty dry, and with that, we're seeing more folks because the snow is melting coming to the region and accessing whether it's Lake Tahoe, Donner Lake, or the Lake Alpine Lakes up in the Plumas right now. So it's a little too soon to see everybody, but so that I would just ask everyone to continue to do your snow dances so we have a remainder of the winter is a little more hardy. So thank you so much, and glad to be here.
Thank you for that, Vice Chair Hawkins. And I'll just add that, like Commissioner Peer, I don't have a boat and I'm not involved in boating, but I did do the online boating card process. And I thought it was amazing. It was so user-friendly and so easy to use. And for someone who has no boating knowledge whatsoever, I found it extremely easy to complete. So just like Commissioner Peer, I commend whoever's working on that project. Also here in Oxnard, because I'm in Southern California, we don't actually have winter. So we had a day and a half of rain, which was amazing so far this year. But as I spend time, I live near the harbor, just it feels like the boating community and the non-motorized boating community is just expanding exponentially. And it's great to see how many people are taking advantage of the waterways. I didn't spend a lot of time really observing it prior to that, other than keeping my kids from getting too far out in the water. But it's just amazing the amount of people who utilize those activities. And I will leave it at that. Thank you. So we will move forward. I have no additional commissioner activities to update, so I want to move to the ad hoc committee reports. And I know we kind of touched on it, but if any of the commissioners have additional information to provide regarding their ad hoc committees, we'll start with Commissioner Peer. Did you want to add to your committee report?
I don't feel there's a whole, I can give a little bit more meat on the bones, if you will.
Sure.
I just felt that we really reach a consensus about trying to find other supporting agencies, be they federal, state, local, to help resolve some of the funding issues associated and related to beach erosion or beach replenishment. And so I thought that was very helpful. And during our session yesterday, as everyone in this meeting knows, we dug a little deeper into the invasive species issues. And I think there's also a sense there that we should maybe start looking a little further afield for other prospective partners, be they federal, state, local, to help fund that ongoing issue that's happening in the Delta. That said, I think we also reach consensus that as an ongoing process, as we sort of work through all the various programs that Boating and Waterways are involved in, that we have a lot more work to do, and that setting sort of this arbitrary deadline of May for ceasing the sort of monthly meetings is probably a little short-sighted, and that we can move forward quite further beyond that. Once again, to sort of work through the some of the more, you know, I mean, there's just a lot of issues that need to be resolved. So that's pretty much all I have.
Thank you, Commissioner Pearson. I would just add that I thought you asked a lot of really good clarifying questions during the website during the workshop, and kind of clarified a lot of things that I didn't realize I needed clarification myself. So I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you appreciating me. Thank you.
Commissioner Muriel, did you want to add to your ad hoc committee report?
I should leave the report to the chair. I'm not the chair, but one thing with respect to a conversation yesterday at the workshop, I really think we need to pay attention to the Marina loan program. The Fed's going to have several interest rate increases. Our ability to provide loans at a more reasonable than bank interest rates may be appealing. And I doubt that too many public or private marinas really had a chance during COVID, because it's, you know, the evaluation of improvements or whatever is pretty on-site intensive, that may not have been a possibility. So I'm just suggesting that we try to find somebody who might get a crystal ball out to see if we might be going back to the grand old days when these loans were competitive and generated some income for the revolving fund.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Murillo. And Vice Chair Hawkins, did you want to add to your commission report? Your subcommittee report?
No, Chair. I think I covered it, and I expect to have more of a detailed report our next meeting. So thank you.
Okay, and I will report on the revenue generating subcommittee. We've had two meetings, and we interacted during the workshop yesterday, and I believe our subcommittee is moving forward. We've had a lot of information exchange, a lot of subject matter experts within the committee. That's been real enlightening for a lot of us who aren't experts on the ins and outs of the boating and waterway worlds and how revenues are generated. So I look forward to moving forward. We're kind of exploring ideas right now about alternatives to a vessel registration, the possibility of some type of fee-driven mechanism for paddle boards and kayaks. And we touched briefly on the idea of having vessel registrations diverted to Department of our state parks and what that would look like. And so I look forward to making additional progress with the subcommittee meeting. And we will close out the commission reports with subcommittee reports with that. So I want to thank all the commissioners for their updates. I appreciate their time and commitment to the subcommittee meetings. I know it's not easy to always squeeze them into your workday, as well as all the participants who attend the meetings as well. And with that, I also see that Director Quintero is now on. Would you like to speak, Director Quintero?
Good morning. My apologies for arriving late to the meeting. I will review the first 20 minutes of the meeting afterwards. And I really appreciate all the work that you all did yesterday on the workshop. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend that because I was testifying before the Assembly Budget Committee, and very much look forward to the year ahead. Really appreciate all of the work that you do, and certainly appreciate Ramona's leadership and all of the work that her team does in support of boating and waterways. Thank you really so much. And I'll be listening to the meeting for the rest of the day today. So thanks so much.
You're on mute, Mr. Chair.
I think I would get used to that at some point.
Were you able to hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Those are my comments. And unless if there's any questions, I'd be happy to take those. But I'll be listening in. So if there are, you know, topics when Ramona you would like to bring me in, I'll be here. Okay.
Thank you for that, Director Quintero.
Thank you.
So again, multiple public comment periods have been scheduled throughout the meeting, and they will occur after the following reports: the Deputy Director's update, Hedgman Sludge Public Fishing Access and Boat Launch Facility, Isleton Boat Launch Facility, Surrendered Abandoned Vessel Exchange Grants, Boating Safety Enforcement Equipment Grants, Aquatic Invasive Plant Control Program, Quagga Zebra Mussel Infestation Prevention Grant Program. Also on the agenda will be public comment period and non-agenda items. And the public comment period will provide the opportunity for the public to make comments on items not on the agenda. Each speaker will have 3 minutes to present their comments, and members of the public are not required to provide their names. Whoever stating it would make it easier for staff to contact members of the public for any follow-up if necessary. Individual speakers may not pool their comments under one person to obtain a longer comment period. So with that, we will move on to the Acting Deputy Director, Ramona Fernandez, who will present the division updates.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Chair Ehrman, and good virtual morning to the commission and everyone else joining us today. First, I want to also thank the commission for your work in 2021, specifically on establishing the ad hoc committees and to assist us in our efforts on sustainability of our Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. Megan, did you say that there was a question?
Yes, let me see.
Prior to mine, what was it?
I saw a hand raised, I believe, during the ad hoc committee reports. I see that the hand is no longer raised, but if you previously had your hand raised and would like to give a comment, I will unmute you, but if not... Okay. Ramona, I'm no longer seeing seeing that. So okay. I'll keep my eye out.
I'll keep going. Let's see, what was I? Yes, so thank you, Commission, for your work in 2021, specifically establishing the ad hoc committees to assist us in our efforts on sustainability of the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. Despite the challenges that continue with the COVID pandemic in 2021, the division has had many successes. Some of those examples include we granted over $24 million for boat launch facilities, removal of surrendered and abandoned vessels, equipment for law enforcement and first responders, education through our aquatic centers, and the quagga and zebra mussel infestation prevention programs. In our maritime law enforcement training program, over 300 local and state law enforcement officers and first responders were trained. We also live streamed over 330 safety videos, reaching over 87,000 students. And our social media platforms were viewed 1.7 million times. We distributed over 5,000 boater kits, and we distributed 6,000 life jackets in 2021. I also look forward to the 2022 year with the hope of us getting back together for in-person commission meetings, and more importantly, our ability for us to meet in person with the public. Next slide, please. A few administrative updates. We continue to do our part to ensure the safety and well-being of our staff related to the COVID pandemic. Most staff continue to work remotely. We do have limited staff coming in. However, our field operation continues to report in even through the COVID. Some information for our commission. The department will be offering the Bear in Mind required training for all commissioners. The training will be held virtual, and the dates are March 17th and March 21st. So if you could please coordinate with Megan to know which one of those dates will work for you. And also, these bear necessities training will be offered for commissioners at a later date, and we'll keep you updated as to what those dates will be. And just a reminder for the commission that our bare in mind and bare necessities are the department's equal employment opportunity training that is required for all state employees. We have some new staff, and we have some staff changes. Next slide, please. So the division welcomes Nicole Englert. Nicole joined our grants and loans unit to serve as a project manager. Maria Perez also joined DBW to serve as in our administrative services unit as the administrative chief. Both Maria and Nicole came to us from other divisions within parks. I also want to share some staffing changes. Ethan Trattner is now the Clean Vessel Act and Boating Infrastructure Grant Project Manager. Mike Rodriguez is now serving as an environmental services intern in our Quagga Zebra Prevention Grant Program. And Lane Massey, who is part of our administrative services manager, will be managing the recreational boating safety grant, which is our federal grant that we funds that we receive through the U.S. Coast Guard. He'll be looking at the initial grant application from final performance through the final performance process. He'll also be evaluating the program's funding delivery to identify any gaps or potential opportunities for growth in these programs, and also with the funding. And I do want to share a retirement announcement. Karina Duggar, manager in our boating safety unit, with over 30 years of service at the Division of Boating and Waterways, is retiring at the end of March. Karina has been instrumental in many processes and program improvements in our boating safety programs. She was the initial manager who implemented the California Boater Card. Our law enforcement maritime training program would not be recognized as one of the best in California without her leadership, relationships with state and local law enforcement agencies, and her forward thinking. She will be missed not only within the division, but from many external partners. I'd like to publicly thank her for her tireless dedication, long discussions we've had over many issues, her passion, and her commitment to the division's mission and service to California voters. We will miss her, and we wish her all the best. Next slide, please. Just a quick update on the oceanography program. We've now, which is managed by our Natural Resource Division under the leadership of Jay Chamberlain. But we have, there's continued coordination here with the division. A new oceanography has been hired. Hannah, and I believe she pronounced her last name, Aiki, senior environmental scientist. Hannah joined us December 2nd of 2021. She is working remotely, but she does have an office in our new building here at Sacramento in the Resources Building, and will have the ability to travel statewide as needed. Some of Hannah's background, her education, she carries an MS in the Aquatic Resource Management from King's College, London, a BA in Environmental Studies, emphasis in ecology from UC Santa Barbara. And some of her background includes environmental scientists with over 9 years of experience working closely with investigators to develop multi-benefit marine research programs throughout California. Previously worked with the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California, Waterhoe Oceanographic Institution, UC Santa Barbara, CSU Northridge, the Marine Stewardship Council, and Channel Islands National Park. She's committed to maintaining and improving a relationship with scientists and research institutions and disseminating the research results statewide. We welcome Hannah to part of Parks and part of the division. The commission can also expect to hear more about the oceanography program as they will be doing a complete presentation at the May meeting. Next slide, please. So in advance of our rulemaking process for the yacht brokers and salesperson's fee structure and for our for-hire licensing program, DBW hosted on February 1st with key boating industry experts to assist us with to establish the revised fee structure for the yacht brokers and to establish a fee schedule for our for-hire licensing program. We also will be working to prioritize other programs that may need either new or revised regulations. We will continue to keep the commission updated on our progress on these programs. Next slide, please. We are pleased to announce that the long-awaited update of our layout and design guidelines for the boat launch and facilities is complete. As many of you know, DBW's boat launch facility program has a long-standing history of funding boat launching facilities across our state. What you may not know is that from the 1960s, DBW's engineers took leadership in developing the first ever engineering guidelines for boat launching facility construction in the nation. These guidelines are not only used in the projects that we fund, but have become the gold standard across our country. These guidelines ensure that boater dollars are used to create high quality, safe, and long-lasting facilities that are still functional 20 to 30 years later. The last comprehensive update to this guideline was completed in 1991. In 2010, a new ADA standards were issued, and in 2013, DBW published guidelines to explain how those new ADA standards impact boat launching facility construction. We are dedicating our 2021 edition to Mr. Bill Curry, PE, who as chief engineer for the Division of Boating and Waterways created our first guidelines in 1968, and each subsequent update, including this edition, as a retired annuitant before he passed away in 2020. I also would like to recognize State Parks employee Carl Rose, PE senior civil engineer, and Moffitt and Nichols, who completed and finalized this edition. I also would like to recognize Karen Dill, as she also was key in ensuring that we move forward and got this documented. The document may be found on our website. Next slide, please. Our vessel registration numbers continue to slightly increase each time I have provided an update. As the latest report from DMV, as you can see on the screen, December 31st, we're now at a little over 700,000 registered vessels. I would also like to note that this does not include recreational documented vessels, which as at our last total from the US Coast Guard was approximately 19,000 vessels. And also from the DMV's last report, over 400,000 expired vessels. Next slide, please. Our California boater card. But to date, we have issued about 126,000 voter cards. We continue to work with our uncommon agency, advertising the program through print, social media, and other digital marketing. We also hope to be attending some in-person events in the near future. Some of the successes in this program include through the pandemic and through all of us working virtually, we've managed to keep up with all the application and voters receiving this card within the 7-day business day expected timeframe. However, some of the challenges that I've seen in this is, as I noted in the previous screen, we have over 700,000 registered vessels. As I mentioned earlier, we have about 126,000 that have received this card. So we'll be looking at that data this year and figuring out gaps to where we can get more participants and aware of getting their voter card. Some of the demographics to date are about 78% are males, 22% females, and 1% non-binary. Next slide, please. I know we did an overview of this at the workshop, but this will be an overview of yesterday's discussion on our Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund Condition Statement. The statement was developed with data from our State Parks Budget Office in coordination with the State Department of Finance. Next slide, please. So this portion of the fund condition is our revenues. And as Lane provided a great presentation yesterday on this, and this is just kind of broken up into several slides, the revenue again, the first column, so the actuals for fiscal year 18-19 and fiscal year 19 and 20 are actual revenues. And the other years listed here are all estimates or projections moving forward. The funds, as noted here, the funds projects to have a negative balance beginning in fiscal year 24-25. Next slide, please. Again, this is similar to the prior slide. This actually shows our expenditures. Again, the fiscal year 18-19 and 19-20 are actual expenditures, and other years' estimates and projections. And we'll be working in conjunction with our department budget office and in conjunction with finance to, as we close out books, to keep the document live and submit the actuals in fiscal year 2021. Next slide, please. This slide highlights the proposed fiscal year 22-23 budget. The governor's proposed budget again authorizes the $30 million transfer from the general fund to the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. As indicated on the screen, it's to cover our aquatic invasive species program and also to offset the Davis Dogwood, which is the Department of Finance transfer, and also some ongoing missed revenue from the potential vessel registration increase that didn't occur current budget year. We also have the ongoing 5% special fund reduction to our operating expenses and equipment. The governor's budget also authorized $15.2 million to transfer from the general fund to our public beach restoration fund for three projects that are identified on the screen as well. Next slide, please. And this pie here just is our the proposed division budget, which is $78 million across all of our fund sources, which includes our Harbors and Watercraft Evolving Fund, the Abandoned Watercraft Abatement Fund, the Public Beach Restoration Fund, and the Federal Trust Authority. Next slide, please. The division's proposed Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund appropriation, as you can see, is just over $40 million. $19.5 million for our local assistance projects, which includes our law enforcement financial aid program, and the Quagga Zebra Infestation Prevention Program, and our boat launching facility grants. $20.6 million is for support for the division, which includes our salary and operating costs. As you recall, last commission for current year, the division reduced our local assistance funding by approximately $12 million to match historical spending levels. This includes reductions to the boat launch facility grants and suspending funding to our loan program. There was also a $750,000 reduction to the Quagga Zebra and Mussel Prevention Grant Program. Next slide, please. And this slide identifies the division's proposed support allocations for our programs for fiscal year 22-23. And next slide, please. And this is our legislative update provided to us by our legislative office under the leadership of Maribel Barajas, Deputy Director. So I will read verbatim. Summary, this report provides a summary excerpt and status of legislation affecting the Division of Boating and Waterways. Information contained in this report is accurate as of February 3rd, 2022. Assembly Bill 1682, Public Safety Speeding Vessels, Lifeguard Rescue Vessels. This bill will clarify that lifeguard rescue and law enforcement vessels are exempt from the 5 mile speed limit identified for specific areas in Harbors and Navigation Code 655.2, which includes within 100 feet of a person's bathing or water skiing, within 200 feet or a beach, swimming, float, diving platforms, etc. The status is introduced January 24th, 2022. There is no commission action. This is just for information only. And next slide, please. And Commissioner Chair, this completes my report at this time. You're mute, Mr. Chair.
I keep getting stuck on mute. We'll now have public comment on Director Ramona Fernandez's presentation. Megan, do we have anybody registered for public comment?
Yes, I see a couple hands raised. I also wanted to remind participants listening in by phone, it's *9 to raise your hand and *6 to unmute. So I'm gonna unmute the first commenter, and that's Jerry Desmond. And Jerry, you should be on the call.
Thank you, Megan, commissioners and Deputy Director Fernandez, Jerry Desmond with Recreational Boaters of California. Just wanted to briefly touch upon our appreciation for the effort that Ramona, Chair Ehrman, and the commissioners that you're making on this stakeholder process to review the programs and the services and the fees and the funding in the future. You're all committing more than you probably signed up for, but it's much appreciated by the boating community. We're very much engaged. We'll continue to be engaged, and we're pleased that there is more time than May for this effort to reach some great recommendations to the legislature. Thank you.
Do we have any other registered comments?
This time I am seeing no other hands raised. Yes, Mr. Chair, I believe that is all at this time.
So I just want to thank Director Ramona Fernandez for, I thought that presentation was extremely informative, and I'm sure the attendees and fellow commissioners would agree, as well as all your leadership in the division. I know the last few years transitioning to a virtual world, trying to lead people from all the different places they're working from isn't easy. I did have one quick question. The AB 682, the summary, lifeguard vessels, do you know if that is meant to be in like a code 3 or an emergency mode, or just in general they can operate above the posted speed limit?
I will confirm on that. I believe it's just in general.
Confirm that. And any other comments from commissioners?
Well, I'll just say, as a former lifeguard who used to hot rod around on City of Newport Beach lifeguard vessels, that I'm not really sure that that's as wisely. I'm kidding. I understand what Ken's saying about the code 3 thing, and I think that's well stated. But I actually had and I don't know if this is the venue for this, Ramona, and it went by quickly, and I'm not really quite understanding why it is that we're projected to go to a negative on the revolving fund at 2025. Is this an expenditure issue or is this a revenue issue? I mean, the slide went by really quickly, but I mean, this is obviously of great concern to the commission and the public that we're going red in another 4 or 5 years. And if you don't want to bring the slide up, maybe you can just explain to me why it is that this whole thing is going red in another 3 or 4 years. Is it a revenue issue? I mean, I'm just not getting it because it went by so quickly. Yeah. Is it a combination of expenditure and revenue?
Yeah, it is a combination of both. But I wish I would have had another slide that we, and I think in the revenue generation committee, Chair Erman had, I think Lane presented one on a kind of a scale that showed we're spending more than what we're bringing in. So it is both, but over the years, there's been more expenditures than revenue through the year. So that's the whole, we've been monitoring this these next several years. We were successful in getting a loan. The $30 million loan is helping us through this process as we work through to find sustainable measures for increasing revenue, and you know, also looking at the expenditures as well.
So where I can just ask Ramona, and I don't want to like dive too deep into the weeds here. I mean, what's the slippery slope? Is it? I mean, why aren't revenues basically? You know, we've all been talking about this for, you know, since I've been on this commission, that there's a lot more interest in the boating community. So one would think that would lead to increased revenue in terms of fees and registrations and so forth and so on. So why is that going down? And then, I mean, anyways, we could talk about this for hours, I'm sure, but I'm just not getting it, right? I mean, you know, I think it's the duty of this commission that we understand and the public is informed that we have a problem 3 or 4 years out. And anyways, I don't know. I guess I'm raising the issue. I'm happy to hear whatever comments you have.
Yeah. So again, you know, with that graph would show where the gap is on, and pretty much it's been I think on programs of expenditures, our aquatic invasive species program, for example. You know, if you look historically, the program's allocation has increased, you know, due to the responsibility of us managing more of the weeds in the Delta there. So it's been a creep on programs, more responsibility on us. So that, I think, is one example. And then just overall with, you know, we look at our revenue with one of the other issues. There was a correction, I think, with the motor vehicle fuel account. So that was revenue that was coming in that was corrected several years back. We can provide new commissioners, because it was, I believe, the prior commission that was informed on this issue. That presentation was done by our Deputy Director of Admin, Will Shasma, that kind of identified the formula for, and I know we got into a little bit of this discussion yesterday at the workshop of the formula for the motor vehicle fuel account. So we can also provide that information to you. And perhaps maybe a suggestion would be, again, at another workshop, or that we really, if you would like to dive into, you know, the fund condition gaps and kind of give the commission an overview of that, you know, more detailed information, that may be helpful.
Well, I think it's not only helpful, I think it's imperative, right? That, you know, we try to, anyways, kind of right the ship, not to mix metaphors, but I mean, I'm sure that you and others in the department are very attuned to this, and I'm just, you know, I don't know. I don't have any solutions. I just want to raise the flag that, anyways, I'll stop there. Thank you for your presentation, Ramon. It was very informative. Much appreciated.
Deputy Director Fernandez, I kind of had a follow-up, but if I'm not mistaken, one of the issues, correct, is the adherence to these mandates don't necessarily come with additional funding as the workload increases, correct? When you talked about the invasive species, as that the need to do that is increasing, you're not necessarily getting additional funding to adhere to those mandates.
That's correct, yes.
And then the $30 million general fund transfer isn't necessarily going to, we don't know for sure that'll even be there next year, correct? Next fiscal year, the following year, so that it's going to maintain the budget each year.
Right.
Thank you. Questions from any commissioners? Any other commissioners?
I would just join in, Ramona, on the, encouraging maybe on the next either workshop or meeting to do a deep dive again into these. I mean, all the commissioners are going to be new, and they won't have been walked through the pieces with Will, so it might be worth doing that again.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions from commissioners? Okay, we will move to facility grant presentations. At this time, we'll hear from department staff Joe Duck on Hedgeman Slough Public Fishing Access and Boat Launch Facility Grants.
Good morning, Chairman Ehrman, commissioners, Director Quintero, Acting Deputy Director Fernandez, and Legal Counsel Tobias, and everyone in attendance. My name is Joe Duke, Project Manager with the Grants and Loans Unit. I am presenting the County of Sonoma's request for a $754,000 construction grant for improvements to the Hoodeman Slough Public Fishing Access and Boat Launch Facility. And representing the county is the Grants Program Manager, Elizabeth Tyree. We are seeking the commission's advice and comment on this proposed project. Next slide. While the commission is not required to hold a tour of the project site, the commission is required to hold a meeting in close proximity. But because of ongoing concerns of the COVID-19 pandemic, a full commission tour is not possible. So the county will provide a presentation of the site for you to learn about Hoodeman Slough and the proposed boat launching facility grant. Travis, would you please begin the county's video?
We're here today at Hoodeman Slough, and we're hoping to rebuild Hoodeman Slough public fishing access. You can see behind me, it needs a little love. We want to improve this site by replacing the ramp, by replacing the dock, by replacing the gangway, so people can have safe and easy access to Hoodeman Slough. The project site is located in the unincorporated southern Sonoma County on Hoodeman Slough, across from Skaggs Island. Hoodeman Slough is close to communities around San Pablo Bay, along the Napa River and Sonoma Creek, along I-80 and 101. Communities in Napa, Sonoma, Solano, Marin, and Alameda counties are less than 40 miles and an average of under an hour's drive time away. Napa and Sonoma are the closest cities, each a little over 10 miles away. People are continuing to use this facility even without the dock. People are launching their kayaks, launching their boats. It's a very important facility for the community to use. There are 7 dozen miles of interconnected navigable tidal waterways between Sonoma Creek, Hoodeman Slough, and the Napa River. Non-motorized boating in these areas has increased and will likely continue to do so. This is a remote yet popular launch for fishing, birding, hunting, and paddling. While Hoodeman Slough is the closest boating access for Sonoma Valley, boaters currently use nearby facilities such as Green Island Boat Launch, Cuttings Wharf, Cullinan Ranch, and Sears Point Boat Launch. At 4.4 acres, the small but critical Hoodeman Slough public fishing access sits at the crossroads of major regional initiatives, including the San Francisco Bay Trail, the San Francisco Water Trail, and provides water access for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, San Pablo Bay National Wildlife Refuge.
Access to the San Pablo Baylands at the moment is really pretty limited at this point. And the Hoodeman Slough Boat Launch is really a key launching site for all of the North Bay and the San Pablo Baylands. It's located centrally here in the marsh with just access to miles of slough. The sloughs here are tidally influenced but have water at all tides, which is really pretty unique in many of the smaller channels up here. And so it allows access to just a huge area of this just beautiful tidal marsh here in the North Bay. This is such a critically important location for providing the public an opportunity to see both the existing tidal marsh as well as the areas that are restoring all around this region.
Regional Parks will renovate the boat launch facility at Hoodeman Slough so that it is usable for all types of boating recreation. The project involves removal of the existing boat ramp and dock and the reconstruction of a new ramp, dock, and gangway system. Other project components include the addition of a low freeboard ADA accessible kayak launching dock, a permanent restroom building, resurfacing the parking lot, and adding overflow parking. The plans call for an accessible path between the parking lot, restroom facility, and the dock and ramp. The facility improvements will support motorized boats under 24 feet long and personal watercraft, including rowboats, canoes, kayaks, and stand-up paddle boards. The new ramp alignment has a different angle with respect to the shoreline. The old ramp was closer to the shore, parallel, and cut into the shoreline to allow the ramp alignment to be constructed. the proposed new alignment is closer to perpendicular to the shore rather than parallel. This puts the ramp slightly more into the channel and into the channel flow rather than cut into the bank. The flow will help with self-cleaning of the ramp.
So as a key location along the San Francisco Bay Area Water Trail and the San Francisco Bay Trail, we're really excited about potential improvements to the site and making it a more accessible location for people to access the marsh.
With this funding, we'll be able to start construction hopefully as soon as this summer and move toward finishing, completing a new boat ramp, a new dock, a new gangway to improve access. Hoodman Slough is an amazing place in southern Sonoma County. It's so close, yet it feels so remote. We would like to provide safe public access to the waterways here. Thank you for considering this request.
Yes, thank you, Sonoma County, for that informative presentation. I will now continue with my staff presentation. As you saw on the county's presentation, Hoodman Slough is located approximately 65 miles southwest of Sacramento. It is a part of North San Pablo Bay Water Trail. Next slide. Hoodman Slough is the closest San Pablo Bay boat launching access site for residents in Sonoma Valley. The facility provides recreational boating access for both motorized and non-motorized boaters to enjoy the miles of nearby interconnected navigable tidalways and surrounding marshlands. Boating access provides fishing, hunting, bird watching, wildlife photography, paddling, and waterway exploration. The facility is also a common camping spot for multi-day non-motorized boating navigating the various boating trails. Next slide. Hoodman Slough public fishing access and boat launch facility features a single lane boat launch ramp and an asphalt parking area. Next slide. The waterway at the boat launching facility is approximately 25 feet wide and 4 to 5 feet deep. The water depth fluctuation is influenced by the San Pablo Bay tides. Due to the narrow width of the waterways, the county has restricted usage at the facility, limiting the vessel size to allow it to be launched there at no longer than 24 feet. Next slide. Silt deposition at the site rendered the boat launching ramp difficult to use for vehicles without high clearance and four-wheel drive due to mud that has accumulated there. Next slide. Natural tidal siltation, silt deposition also accumulated under the boating floats and they become twisted beyond repair. Next slide. The ramp remains open, but public access to the boarding floats was denied in 2017. And in 2020, next slide, the boarding floats were removed. Next slide. The asphalt at the facility's parking area has many cracks and the striping has faded. Next slide. There are no restrooms and the facility is not accessible for those with disabilities. Next slide. The design phase was funded by the Wildlife Conservation Board, also known as WCB, and is currently at the 90% design level. The proposed project will be constructed with a combination of DBW, WCB, and county funding. WCB will contribute funding to demolish the existing facility, resurface the parking lot, add an overflow parking area in the northwest end of the facility, install a permanent restroom building, and construct a path to travel. Sonoma County will contribute funding for project management and vegetation replacement. DBW funding will replace the existing single-lane boat launch ramp with a single-lane precast V-grooved concrete boat launch ramp, replace the boarding float and piles with a new standard height, 8 foot wide by 80 foot long pile-guided boarding float, constructed on the northwest side of the ramp and a gangway access. Attach a low freeboard boarding float to the standard height boarding float for non-motorized launching access and install a project credit sign. Next slide. This table identifies the estimated costs for the proposed improvements. The entire project cost as currently proposed is $1.526 million. WCB and DBW will each contribute up to $754,000. Sonoma County will contribute up to $18,000. This estimate also includes a construction contingency fund reserved for any unforeseen overages that may occur during the construction process. Next slide. We estimate that 17,461 motorized and non-motorized boaters will benefit from the improvements annually, and 349,220 boaters will benefit from the improvements over the 20-year life of this grant. DBW analysis establishes that a benefit cost ratio exceeding one is worthy of consideration from a financial perspective. The benefit cost ratio for this proposed project is a 4.06. Next slide. The county plans to increase its maintenance activities to ensure ongoing clearing and removal of siltation from the improved ramp, keep the access road, parking area, a restroom, launch ramp, boating floats improvements in good conditions once completed. And at this time, DBW seeks the commission's advice and comment on this proposed $754,000 Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund construction grant to the County of Sonoma for the Hoodman Slough public fishing access and boat launch facility improvements as described in the February 10th, 2022 feasibility report. Next slide. And this concludes my presentation. My contact information is provided on the screen. Elizabeth Tyree with the county and myself will be available to answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move for public comments. Megan, do we have anybody registered for public comment?
Mr. Chair, I'm not seeing any public comments at this time. I would like to remind participants that if you're dialing in by phone, it's star 9 to raise your hand. At this time, I am seeing no hands raised, Mr. Chair.
With that, I will ask for a motion for consent for the proposed grant.
I'd like, Mr. Chair, if I had a couple of questions.
Sure.
If I may, and I don't know, it's probably directed, it's more logistical, so probably Joe, not to you, but to the representative from the county. So what is the bathroom facility? Is that like a pit toilet type thing? Because you're right down there in this, in the marshland, and just someone walk me through what that physically looks like. You don't have a sewer system down there, right? You don't have water running down there. I mean, is that to you, Joe, or is that to the representative from Sonoma County?
Elizabeth, you want to answer that, or?
Certainly. Thank you for the question. This is Elizabeth Tyree from Sonoma County. So it's a pump out system for the restroom facility, and it's a concrete block building, so very durable, and it'd be pumped out regularly.
Okay, so that's just what we used to call a pit toilet. So that's just, I was more out of curiosity. My second question is the angle of that launch facility, and it's going to have that new ramping and floating, dock that goes out. Does that impede navigation through that slough? So in other words, Joe said it's 24 feet wide. How far does that go out, and to what degree does that impede navigation through that? And is that an issue, and has that been taken under consideration?
Again, this is Elizabeth Tyree, and thank you for this question through the chair. The new design rotates the ramp slightly, so tidal flow clears the ramp. We had a problem with reed and silt deposition in the past. You saw in a few of the pictures where it tilted the ramps, and we had to finally remove them because they became a safety issue that we could no longer repair. So this new design is more sustainable, will require less maintenance. It does not impede navigation up Hoodman Slough and the channels in the area because it's still tucked in. but the alignment of the ramp is different to allow silt and reed cleaning that better supports the system at the site.
That's great. That's all I had. Thank you. I was just all out of curiosity. So thank you very much, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
And on that, Ken, I'm sorry to have to, Mr. Chair, that I had to interrupt.
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
Any other commission questions?
No, just a comment, Vice Chair Hawkins here. Having lived in the North Bay and that region, I saw firsthand the multi-use outdoor enthusiasts that was mentioned, fishing, hunting, as well as like the birders, the bird watching, and seeing multi-generational families out there. And on that opening, vignette video of in the morning is exactly that. You would see tons of people out there consistently. So I love the project and that whole area, and see a lot of value with the commission moving this forward.
Any more questions from commissioners? Okay, so I'll now ask for a motion to consent.
I so move. Tom here.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Hearing no further discussion, I will ask Megan to call the vote.
Okay. All right. Commissioner Rudy Murillo of Coronado, California, how do you vote?
By the way, well done presentation. Aye.
Commissioner Pettibone of Sacramento, California, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye, thank you. Commissioner Tom Pierre of San Francisco, California, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye, thank you. Vice Chair Hawkins of Truckee, California, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye, thank you. And Chair Kenneth Ehrman of Oxnard, California, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Aye. Unanimous, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for that, Megan. And thank you, Joe Ducks, for your presentation.
Thank you.
So at this time, we'll now hear from department staff Casey Caldwell on the Islington Boat Launch Facility Grant.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll wait for the slides to come up.
Mr. Caldwell, if you would like, if it would make it any easier, you can run these yourself or I can do them for you if you'd like.
Probably better for you to run them if that's okay with you. Thank you very much. All right, Mr. Chair, good morning, fellow commissioners. Director, great to be here in front of you today. My name is Casey Caldwell. I am a project manager in DBW's Grants and Loans Unit. And today I will be presenting the City of Islington's request for a $200,000 planning grant from the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. This grant will fund concept design, engineering, and permitting for a proposed boat launching facility in the City of Islington along the Sacramento River. With us today to represent the City of Islington are Chuck Bergson, City Manager, and Diana O'Brien, Administrative Assistant. We are here to seek the Boating and Waterways Commission's advice and comment on the proposed project. Due to ongoing public health circumstances, we unfortunately were not able to take the Commission to Islington to walk the site as we usually would. In place of a physical site tour, at this time, the City will share with us a brief and live presentation on the proposed project. Slide, please. And this is a bit of an unusual process for us, so we beg your indulgence with any potential hiccups, but we're looking forward to hearing this. And Mr. Bergson, I respectfully turn the floor over to you.
Hi, this is Chuck Bergson and Diana from Islington. Can you hear us?
Yes.
So I'm Chuck Bergson with the City of Islington. Thank you, Chair and Directors. You can have next slide. Yeah, Islington is located, as you are probably aware, between San Francisco and Sacramento in the middle of the Delta at Northern California. We're kind of co-located to those both urban areas. The Delta is a recreation destination for people throughout California. We have people visiting in the Delta from LA, the Central Valley, Northern California, and the Bay. I know several people, I was raised in the Bay myself, several people want to go, really can't get any beach activity in the San Francisco area, so going to Isleton is close to like what beaches are in Southern California. Next slide. The Delta is a location of a lot of activities, fishing, camping, skiing, boating. We have a winery and agricultural. We have vineyards and wine ag properties up and down the Sacramento River. And there's they bring in a lot of tourists. We have festivals up and down the river based on wine and agricultural products. We also have festivals in Isleton. So a lot of people come to Isleton for a couple of festivals that we run a year. They come by boat and by car. Next slide. This is the actual location of the boat launch facility, proposed boat launch facility, and the existing boating and fishing pier in Isleton. The fishing pier was put in about 20 some years ago and it's in very rough condition. The proposed ramp is shown there a little off to the left. It's my understanding that there's no public access to the Sacramento River on the east side of the river. So that's one of the reasons why we'd like to propose this. We do have a lot of river activity, boating activity, fishing. And so this would provide a public access to the this side of the Delta, the east side of the Delta. Next slide. This is a view. Is this a video?
Oh, yeah.
We'll run the video. If we can run the video. This is a view from the street showing the other side of the levee and the street side. This is Highway 160 where the entrance is to the proposed boat facility and then the pier. Okay, the next one. This is on top of the levee where people would drive up to at First Street. They would drive and then the boat launch would be just south of that edge of that wall. It's shown in another slide. And that's the Sacramento River that you're looking at. Next video. Oh, it runs, okay. That's Highway 160 coming down. That's still the top of the levee. That's the space in front of the bathroom would be the access, the handicap access to the top of the levee. And that's the stairs down to the parking lot. Okay, next. Yeah, this is a view from the parking lot, the street, looking across to some of the supplemental parking. We can't get all the boating parking on site, so we have two remote sites. They're relatively within walking distance to provide the required tandem parking for the boat ramp. We're on the other side of 160. Okay, next slide. This is the other remote side. This is the school district, which is, again, as you go up that street, that's C Street, that's the walking distance to the pier. But this school site's this is about a quarter acres unused. And we've talked to the school district that we're going to lease the site to us for parking. Like I said, it has a quarter acre. We can probably put 15 spaces there. And this is, again, a view from the top of the levee. That's the existing pier. The boat ramp would go just to the left of where we're standing. We also are looking to, in the running for a BIG grant to get the pier upgrade. Next slide. This is This is a conceptual plan of what the layout would be with the revised boat ramp, the location of the boat ramp, and the angle of pink is the access ramp off the up and down the levee. The access would be off, there's two accesses. One's off A Street, another one further south, and they come up, drop their boat there and leave going to the east. And then the other side of the arrow, so to speak, is the downside of the levee where the parking is. Next slide. And this is a site view from the Highway 160 frontage, looking at the existing parking facilities and the restroom facilities. And then you're kind of like looking into the levee and the levee, the top of the levee was where the ramp is, and the other side of the levee is where the existing pier and the waterfront is. Next slide. And this is at the top of the levee. The proposed boat ramp, it would be shown where the arrow is. Again, the access would be from the south driving north. They'd to bring the boat down the ramp and exit northern. Next slide. Again, this is a look at from the top of the pier. This is where the access, the ADA access would be located. It'd be from the parking lot, it would ramp up on this side of the levee and come up top to the top of the levee into the pier. Next slide. And this is a aerial view of just kind of showing the spatial locations. The angle big dash, that's where the ramp is, and the parking lot is located there with the existing pier and fishing facilities. And so the long arrow from left to right, that's the one of the accesses, as well as the short arrow, again, to access to the top of the levee, and then access to the boat ramp. And then toward the bottom of the picture is that school site for parking, and then off to the toward the right of the picture, that's a city-owned tower parking lot, and that's the other supplemental parking. Next slide. This is, again, a different view of that school parking lot at C and Fifth Street. Next slide. And then this is a view of the city's supplemental parking, the tower parking. Tower Park parking lot. We call it Tower Park. There's a water tower there, so it's called Tower Park parking lot. Again, both those sites are walking distance. And again, I just want to emphasize that there's a lot of interest in boating and fishing on the river, and there's no public access. And we would like to put forth to have a boat ramp in at Nileton for this side of the Sacramento River. Next slide. Is that it? Oh, but that's this overall location. I'm happy to take any questions.
Mr. Chair, I will take it from here. And Chuck and Diana, thank you both for that and putting together that presentation. Really appreciate the local insight on the site and the amenities. My presentation now will cover some of the same ground, so I will strive to be as non-redundant as I possibly can. This picture does give an aerial view of where the proposed ramp is in relation to First Street, which Chuck explained was the access road to the ramp, and then Highway 160 is just slightly south of that, and Highway 160 is the main road that brings folks into Ileton. Slide, please. Chuck just showed you this slide, so I'm not going to dwell on it too much. I'll be walking briefly through the boating facility amenities that are at the pins on this slide. Slide, please. Before I go further, I do want to share a brief note about the site that's important to understanding the project as a whole. The site where the boat launching ramp's entrance would be is situated on top of a levee on the south shore of Sacramento River. And in this photograph, you can see the recreation area's parking on the left, and on the right is First Street, just so you get some sense of the elevation change between those two amenities. Slide, please. This is the preliminary concept drawing that you just saw as well. The bright dots show where the amenities were that were the same as the yellow pins on the prior slide. The farthest left dot is where the ramp would go. Farthest right is where the ADA access would go. And on the bottom is where the existing parking and restroom are. Slide, please. First component that I'll be walking through briefly is the proposed ramp location. The entrance is on top of a levee, and there's limited space to install features that we might normally would, like a wide apron at the top of a ramp. The First Street is just it's a one-lane road, so constrained space. That black arrow you see there is First Street, and as the project is currently envisioned, boaters would drive left to right down First Street, stop about where the arrow itself is, and then back down the ramp and launch. Then they drive back up the ramp, continue driving east down First Street, and then eventually wind up back on Highway 160 to get into town and park. Slide, please. And here's a look at the spot on First Street where the ramp entrance would be. The ramp would travel down the levee with the entrance pretty close to where you see that tree there on the right. Slide, please. And here's a view of near the same location, but looking down the side of the levee itself. The tree that was on the right in the prior photo is on the left here. So help you get oriented. The levee slope towards the river is steeper than a typical DBW boat launch ramp. So a key facet of finishing the concept design will be establishing a layout for the ramp that can cost effectively meet our ramp slope design guidelines and our safety requirements. Slide, please. The next component of our proposed project is parking. And the box is drawn around the existing parking area on the right and the privately owned lot on the left is separate from the city owned parking lot. I think Chuck covered the parking constraints in the area pretty well, so I'm going to move past this. Slide, please. The existing parking lot is shown here. Might look kind of big on the photo. It's not super big. Even if you took out the existing concrete work and the plants, you'd still have pretty limited space to park vehicle trailers, let alone maneuver a vehicle trailer in that lot around other parked vehicles. So that's why we're looking at the possibility of satellite lots to be near the project. Slide, please. You've seen the visuals of this already. The city has proposed to provide this parcel near Ileton Elementary School for vehicle trailer parking. Northwest corner of the parcel is about 700 feet from where the head of the ramp would be. A little farther than what we usually put, but it is definitely walkable, like Mr. Bergson said. The other site that he mentioned was the water tower site. That's about 600 feet from the ramp. So a couple of options that aren't unreasonably far from where the site would be. Slide, please. Path of travel from either of those satellite lots to the recreation area would require boaters to cross Highway 160 on foot to reach the ramp. There is a crosswalk at that location, but there aren't any other indicators to drivers. The pedestrians are likely to be in that area. The stop sign you see faces south and Highway 160 runs east and west. Traffic on this road is sporadic and the speed limit is 30 miles an hour. So this crossing can be safely done. I've done it. But additional signage warning drivers to watch for pedestrians may take on heightened importance if boaters will be regularly walking across this crosswalk. Slide, please. So wrap up the parking discussion, top of the slide, you see the proposed project site. The Highway 160 runs kind of towards the top of this slide as well. And then you have the parking lots to the right and at the bottom. So again, kind of just getting spatial orientation to where we are. Slide, please. So we discussed the ramp, we discussed parking, and we'll look briefly at accessibility features, specifically the ADA path of travel and the existing restroom. Slide, please. The accessible restroom is located adjacent to the recreation area's existing parking lot, and this restroom is not brand new, but it's in good shape. Accessible parking for regularly sized vehicles is located adjacent to the pictured ramp you see there that leads up to the restroom. Slide, please. Now, the final photo I'll show you is where the ADA path of travel would go, basically next to the restroom, and the slope of that path of travel would have to be engineered for safety, obviously, so we're picturing a model with one or more switchbacks, and that's a component that would be sketched out during the concept design phase of this project. Slide, please. So here's a rundown of how the grant funds would be used. We're looking at $27,000 for preliminary concept design that would be completed before any other grant-funded work. Then after that, basically half the funding, $98,000, would be designated for engineering up to the 60% phase of plan development. Then once we have the 60 solid, the grant would provide $75,000 to assist the city with obtaining necessary permits. One product of all this work will be an initial construction cost estimate that would be refined and improved over the course of the design process. Slide, please. Looking at project benefits, number of annual user days this project would create, based on the combination of motorized and non-motorized boaters that he expects to access the facility, is 13,460 for the first year and gradually increasing over time. So based on that figure and looking at the 20-year standard life of a BLF, we forecast about 330,000 user days resulting from this newly created access. For purposes of providing a cost estimate, DBW assumed the construction cost estimate would be about $2 million. Too early to discuss construction cost details, obviously, but that initial estimate represents kind of a high end of the range that we would typically expect for constructing these kind of project features with a reasonably high contingency allowance built in for the special circumstances of the project site. So using that $2 million figure, the benefit cost ratio is 2.13, which is well over the 1.0 that DBW requires. Slide, please. One condition we're proposing for the project, because having a firm parking plan is a critical part of making this project viable, we are proposing that before any grant funds be made available for engineering and permitting, DBW must accept the city's plan for providing parking for at least 20 vehicle trailers. Slide, please. So with all the foregoing in mind, with that condition in mind, at this time, DBW seeks advice and comment on this proposed $200,000 Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund planning grant to the city of Isleton for the proposed Isleton boat launching facility described in the February 10th, 2022 feasibility report. Mr. Chair, this concludes my presentation. We welcome your questions.
Thank you, Megan. Do we have anybody for a public comment?
At this time, I am not seeing any hands raised. Once again, if you're listening in by phone, it's *9 to raise your hand. And Mr. Chair, I am seeing no public comments at this time.
Commissioner, questions or comments?
Yes, Chair. Catherine Pettibone here. I was curious from how the project envisions the ramp working with the existing boat pier. Is the idea you take your boat down the ramp and then you'd be able to move it over to the pier, and how is the, what is the distance between the boat ramp and the left side of the pier? Is there going to be an ability to be on that left side, or do you have to go around the front side of the pier that's in the river?
So Mr. Bergson can add some color to this in a second, but because we are still basically a concept, there are different ways we could do that. Totally reasonable to potentially put a boarding float in adjacent to the ramp. Or the pier could be used. We could, like Mr. Bergson said, we're looking at the possibility of a big grant that would move that pier out. But again, early days on that as well. So very conceptual right now, multiple ways we could approach that. It's a great question. And that's something we need to sketch out. Chuck, do you have anything to add? I don't believe so. Thank you, Commissioner.
Any other commissioner questions or comments?
A quick one. It looks like we're in a bit of an inflationary period. Is that being accounted for in the as the project goes forward?
I'll let Karen field that in a second. But again, because we're a concept and we still have a relatively high contingency on what the construction costs would be. Looking forward, we're not seeing much of an inflationary factor there. As far as the near-term work, we always have to find out what the bid environment is once we actually have the grant funds in hand. So it's a little bit hard to predict. We're conscious of the world out there.
Thank you.
Any other commissioner comments?
Mr. Chair, I did... I was trying to get my head around this whole project and looking at the presentations, and as the rest of the commission knows, I'm always very concerned about accessibility issues. So I understand the accessibility issues for the areas near the waterfront. And I was studying very closely those walkways coming from that remote parking location. And those seem very antiquated and very non-accessible, no curb cuts, none of those sort of modern accoutrements that, you know, require ADA accessibility. So that last photo you showed there, sort of coming in from that remote location, I mean, that's going to require a lot of work to make sure that that is ADA accessible. So I guess that's redundant, right? That's like saying ATM machine, but anyways, anyways, it's ADA compliant. That's a better word for it. So that's not really a question. It's a comment, but I would really commend this entire study process to take that into consideration, because I don't think it's a really viable alternative to say, oh, we'll just put accessible parking here. Because inevitably, like my wife uses a wheelchair, right? She wants to park with the family. We're going to park over here. And now all of the sidewalks coming back from there, you know, I'll just go down the middle of the road. That, you know, that doesn't cut the mustard, right? So that's my comment.
Commissioner Peter, I appreciate that. Your comments taken on board fully. We share your concern about accessibility. Obviously, I think our history of projects proves out that that's something that we take very seriously for every project. I think everyone we've had before this commission recently, we take care to call that out. Again, because we are a concept, it's a little bit difficult to go into further detail about where we are on that, but rest assured that it's something we take seriously.
Well, I'm going to put up just a slightly finer point on it, right? It's like, you're going to have to, all of that sidewalk that's coming from the remote parking location, you know, has to be in your design program so that all of that is workable and accessible. And it's a modern upgrade, because I can see that all that stuff was built in the 1920s. So I just, you know, and I'll leave it at that. But thank you for your time, Casey. And that was a great presentation, and also a great presentation from the folks from Islington, however you say it.
Commissioner Pierre, I want to jump in on that. One of the reasons we are doing a concept design as part of this grant is because of the ADA issues. Right now, our intent is to put all of the ADA parking at the parking lot right near the restroom, so that those with accessibility challenges do not have to navigate those city streets. That's one of the, and I'm sorry that did not come across in the presentation.
And that's exactly the point I'm trying to raise, Karen, is that's not an acceptable solution, right? You can't say, oh, we'll just put all the ADA parking here, and then we'll have another location over here for all the regular folk. I mean, that's not a solution. You know, I don't think that's ADA compliant. I mean, I don't know the law that well, but, you know, I just want everyone to think through that part of the design process. Right. It's just, you know, that you can't do that. Right. Oh, here's where all the blue zones are. And then over here are all the regular folks. So I think we really need to sort of work through how all of that is going to, you know, make sure the entire project, the entirety of the project is accessible for everyone. OK, so enough said. But I appreciate your comments, Karen. I understand what you're saying. Right.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Here's a Chuck with Islington. I want the commission to know that the city is independently studying the safety and traffic and pedestrian issues throughout the town. And independently, we are looking to fix all the ADA accesses throughout town, including Highway 160. We just recently completed a local road safety plan, which makes us eligible for road dollars and pedestrian dollars to fix those. So we plan to fix those and correct those independent of this project. Hopefully it goes in tandem with this project.
Any other commission questions? So I will ask for a motion to consent.
I'll make a motion.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Any further discussion?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I do see a hand raised from the public, so I'm going to go ahead and unmute them if that's okay.
That was IELTS.
Oh. No, I lowered my hand.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
And apologies if I mispronounce your name, Eric Chu.
Could you hear me?
Yes.
I'm an Isleton resident, so I just want to comment on the parking issue, if I may. I think, you know, Highway 160 is a pretty busy highway, but it's a very rural community. So, you know, a lot of us are kind of used to, you know, fast moving traffic and maybe walking a little bit, you know, to get to the boat ramp. So I think the parking challenges may not be as difficult to, you know, deal with as it would be in a more urban or suburban setting. So I just wanted to make my comment. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any others, Megan?
This time, no, Mr. Chair.
So hearing no other discussion or question, I'll have Megan call the vote.
I'm going to start with Commissioner Murillo of Coronado, California. Commissioner Murillo, how do you vote?
Oh, thank you. Tom, were you satisfied? I cut out there for a little bit and had to get back on another channel here. Your questions were answered. Your question was answered.
I raised my concerns and they were heard. So, I don't necessarily know that there's a question at this point, but I just wanted to raise the issue. So, but Rudy, I appreciate that. The answer is yes.
Very good. Yes, and I. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Pettibone of Sacramento, California, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye, thank you. Commissioner Pierre of San Francisco, California, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye, thank you. Vice Chair Hawkins of Truckee, California, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye, thank you. And Chair Ehrman of Oxnard, California, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Aye, all right. Another unanimous vote. Thank you, commissioners.
You all.
Okay, so at this time, we're going to take a brief 15-minute break, but I will go ahead and round up and we will come back at 11:05.
Chair Ehrman, it is 11:05 and we are recording and broadcasting.
Thank you. We're back on. And at this time, we will hear from Department Staff Ron Kent regarding the Surrendered Abandoned Vessel Exchange Grants.
Good morning, Director Quintero, Chairman Ehrman, Commissioners, Acting Deputy Director Fernandez, Legal Counsel Tobias, and everybody else that's joining us today. My name is Ron Kent. I'm here today to provide an update on the Surrendered and Abandoned Vessel Exchange Program for year 2022. We refer to this as the SAVE program. Next slide, please. Why do we have SAVE? Numerous abandoned and derelict vessels create a pervasive environmental and public safety problem in coastal and inland waterways of California, as well as the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. SAVE assists local agencies with removal of abandoned recreational vessels from California's navigable waterways to prevent them from becoming navigational and or environmental hazards. As a preventative approach, we also assist boat owners who wish to surrender older boats that have reached the end of a useful life and would otherwise end up abandoned on our waterways. I'm now going to report on the success of the last two grant cycles. These grants are two-year grants. Next slide, please. SAVE 19 is for fiscal year 2019 and 2020. These grants expired in September 30th of 2021. There were 248 abandoned vessels that were removed and destroyed, and 244 vessels that were surrendered for destruction. A total of 492 vessels were removed and destroyed. Next slide, please. SAVE 20 is for fiscal year 2020 and 2021. These grant agreements are now in their final year of availability, and agencies are removing and destroying vessels. Grantees have until September 30th of 2022 to use this funding, so the numbers you see here will increase. Next slide, please. SAVE 21 is for fiscal year 2021 and 2022. Agencies are in the process of signing these agreements and working towards removing and destroying vessels. Next slide, please. Here I've listed the amount of funding and percentage of total funding available that was awarded to each of the five California regions shown on the slide. Northern California was awarded $558,500, 13%. San Joaquin County Delta, $443,000 for 15.78%. San Francisco Bay Area, $956,000, 35.09%. Central Coast, $131,500 for 4.78%. And Southern California for $861,000 for 31.31%. Next slide. The applications for fiscal year 2021 grant cycle were scored by a team of independent reviewers to promote the credibility and the review process. The application allows DBW to prioritize funding to agencies with the most need, cost-effective methods, and effective preventive strategies. Additionally, points are awarded for agencies that work with private marina owners in the prevention of abandoned vessels. The SAVE 22 grant application will be open from March 15 through April 29 for the 22-23 funding year. DBW will be conducting a virtual grant application and management workshop on April 5th of 2022. The workshop will cover how to apply for a grant, scoring criteria, application process, grant award procedures, reimbursement requirements, and other requirements of the grant program. Notification of the workshop and grant application will be sent out via press release, email to potential applicants, and posted on our website. SAVE program staff continue to participate via phone conferencing in regional coordination meetings such as the Delta Officers Intelligence Team, Bay Area Marina Operators, and the Abandoned Derelict Vessel Workshop. DBW updated reimbursement request forms to assist agencies with providing request submittals that can be approved more quickly. Next slide, please. This is my contact information, and this concludes my presentation, and I'll now field any questions you might have.
Megan, do we have anyone registered for public comments or questions?
This time, I'm not seeing any, Mr. Chair. Just a reminder, if you're dialing in by phone, it's *9 to raise your hand. But at this time, I am seeing no hands raised.
Any commissioners with questions or comments?
I'll just make a quick comment. This is one of my favorite programs, as it really does help both the navigable uses of our waterways and the environmental protection of our waterways. When you get an abandoned vessel in there and it's the paint's peeling off and there's any gas or diesel, it's just a nightmare. So I'm glad that it's being used, and hopefully, you know, it'll continue to grow if it's needed. And again, just great job.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from commissioners?
Mr. Chair, my question is this, Ron, and this is something I've never really understood about this program, is what is the culpability of the owner of the vessel?
Unfortunately, nothing. A lot of the boats that we get are boats from people who just can't afford to maintain them anymore, and they can't afford the pretty high costs for salvaging a boat. And so what's helpful is that if they sign it over ahead of time, but some of them don't, unfortunately. And so there's been two occasions where we have got restitution for somebody who abandoned a boat, and the agency legally sought restitution, and we have it and we're collecting it. But as a general rule, there isn't. They can cite them, but if they don't have anything, if they don't have any money, they don't, you know, they're on their last legs. It doesn't really do anything.
So let me dive a little bit deeper, because sure. This is something that I've never really understood. So I understand the concept of what we call in the law a judgment-proof plaintiff, right? Sure. Great, yeah. Got the judgment. Wonderful. You're never going to collect.
And nothing happens, right?
Right. So is there some element of this program in place? And, you know, I don't know how to say this diplomatically. I understand sort of the segment of the population we're dealing with here, right? So I'll just leave it at that. But is there some program in place, some element of the program that routinely seeks restitution for the efforts to refund the department for this program?
Simply put, not that I know of. There is a statute that says that the agencies have the option of citing the person that owns the boat. Okay. But other than that, we don't have an arm or a portion of the program that says we're going to pursue people that may have a way to pay for part of what they're doing. I will say this, in the last couple of years, we've had a couple of vessel owners that said, look, I can afford to pay for a tow. I can afford to get the vessel from here to there, you know, that kind of a thing, or try to chip in whatever they can. And so that's always, you know, a warm and fuzzy feeling. But as a general rule, no. And to hopefully to answer your question, there is no like enforcement arm or anything from the program that says we can go after people for any sort of restitution for the cost of removing their vessels.
Yeah. Well, I just think every vessel is registered either with the state or federally.
Yes.
So there's a CF number on it or a hull number on it.
Yep.
And, you know, if we're not sending out at least a letter. I mean, maybe it's not, maybe you guys have looked into it and it's not worth the effort. I mean, I don't know.
You know,
right? Because there's a cost in trying to,
right,
you know, implement a restitution program. And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just the whole thought for me is, I guess, a taxpaying citizen that I just walk away from my boat and now the state does it for me, right? Something about that doesn't settle with me. So,
well, to be honest, if they will give us the boat, if they'll turn the boat over before it becomes a problem, the cost is like a quarter of what it is when it's after it's abandoned. So, and we ask our agencies to reach out to marinas, to boat owners when they see them, go to events and get this information out, get out our contact information. We have brochures that we have that we give them to pass out. So we're actively pursuing them to get them to turn it in before it comes a problem. And that's the key thing, is right, before it becomes an issue. But there are so many people that fall into several categories. One of them, it was owned by my uncle, and my uncle gave it to me, and I don't know what to do with it, and it's been sitting there, and now it's sinking. Or somebody, they've been kicked out of their house, so they're living on their boat. Now the boat's starting to sink. They got nowhere to go, and they don't want to leave it. You know, that kind of thing. And there's quite a few of those. And so that's the problem. Once they get the boat and it starts sinking or has sunk, then it becomes a cost.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get that. So I'm just playing off of that. If your costs are of remediation or not remediation, but of, you know, dealing with the issue at 25% for someone who does it in advance of the vessel sinking, right? Maybe we could reallocate some resources to getting ahead of the curve, right? Because I've never seen once anything about an abandoned vessel, we'll call it an amnesty program.
I mean, right.
You know, and
we're one of the, I won't speak for all of the programs because I don't know all the programs, but our program doesn't have an educational kitty, you know, fund to advertise things. And we rely on the agencies themselves to go out and push the issue. And I got to tell you, they're real on board with this because they realize what a problem the boats become. So a lot of them do really go out and advertise for us because we don't have, like I said, we don't have a kitty for you know, radio ads or flyer. We print flyers from our own boating and waterways fund that I know of. But I understand what you're saying. And I agree with it. I think it would be cool if we could do that. And I think it would help, to a certain degree. So anyway, I hope I've answered your question.
You sure did. Chair, Deborah Holmes has her hand up, and I think she might want to address this.
Hi. Yes. Yeah, so, I'm Deborah Holmes. I'm the manager over the SAVE program at DBW. And I just want to address some of your comments, Commissioner Peer. We have just this year, we've added language to our grant agreement for the SAVE program, where we are encouraging the SAVE grantees to actually issue citations to the best of their ability when they encounter an abandoned boat. So by the Harbors and Navigation Code, that is an infraction with a fine up to $3,000 plus cost of removal. So we're moving forward trying to implement this as one of our standards, but we do get pushback from our law enforcement agencies, as you mentioned, that they don't feel it's a good use of their time because it's rarely productive. And so they spend a lot of time writing reports, but nothing comes of it. So there is a little bit of reluctance on their issue. I mean, from their standpoint on this. And then the other thing that they encounter that's also a problem is if a boat's been inactive on the DMV records for 7 years, the last registered owner disappears off of the the report. So we can't find out who the last registered owner is if they haven't contacted DMV in 7 years. But it is something that we really would like to get going and moving forward and trying to recoup some of the money. And also just to set a precedent that we want to hold these people accountable for abandoning their boats. And I don't know if Karen has more to add.
Yes. Okay. To add to that, the responsibility per code through the regulation through the statute is on the local agencies for going after these the folks who abandon their vessels. There have been a couple of agencies that have been successful. Sacramento County comes to mind, and they've done a fantastic job. But just like Deborah mentioned, a lot of the local agencies, they don't have the resources and don't have the will in their legal department to go after these agencies. So we're doing what we can on our side, trying to enforce the law from our perspective and return some of that money. But it is a process, as Ron and Debbie mentioned, but we're working through that, trying to bring more enforcement and accountability to the boat owners and to our grantees.
I will also say from a legal side of things that, you know, if someone, and just being practical, if someone cannot save their own boat, they probably have very few resources to go after. So yeah. I think, you know, we're trying for a proactive approach that basically says, okay, there are some things we can do and we can encourage citations, but when you add in the legal fees to go after somebody who doesn't have any resources, at a certain point, it's just not practical. So there's that.
No, appreciate it. Thanks, everyone. I feel like I'm taking up everyone's time today with all my questions, but that's just one element of this program that I've never quite got. So I appreciate Ron, Deborah, Karen, and Catherine for your input. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other commissioner questions? I would just add real quickly to Mr. Kent, the cost ineffectiveness of seizing those boats is similar to when you, that's why one of the reasons you see so many RVs on the road is it's very expensive to take them and move them. And once you get them somewhere, the tow yards end up having them forever and they can't get rid of them. So it's very common for us to just pass right by them. Like we don't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And there's no civil lien sale process for these vessels, correct?
Civil lien sale. I know that the private marine owners go through lien sales to try to get rid of the vessels. And if they don't, then they can use their lien documents to turn the vessels into us.
Right.
I know historically on occasions, in the distance past, some of some owners and some marina owners would sell the boats on Craigslist just to get them out. But I think we've been very successful at moving them away from doing that kind of a sale because ultimately they'd sell it to somebody who doesn't know anything about the boat. And 2 months or 2 weeks later, the boat's abandoned somewhere, but the marina owners aren't doing that anymore. We've been reaching out to them ourselves and our agencies have been reaching out to them and we're working with them to help them get those boats out of there before they're sold on Craigslist and before they become a problem.
Yeah, because they end up on the street.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Yeah. So it's a little easier on the street than in the water, but it's still a problem. It's still a problem.
And do you guys take physical control of these vessels?
We don't. The agencies take them.
Perfect. Yeah. I have no further.
Okay.
Any other commissioner questions or comments? Thank you, Mr. Kim, for your presentation.
Thank you.
Next, we have Joanna Naughton on Boating Safety Enforcement Equipment Grants.
Okay, good morning, everyone. Commissioners, DBW staff, and members of the public. My name is Joanna Naughton, and I'm the Program Administrator for the Boating Safety and Enforcement Equipment Grant Program within the Loans and Grants Unit. Next slide, please. Today, I will provide you with an update on the Boating Safety and Enforcement Equipment Grant Program. The purpose of this program is to provide grants to local government agencies performing boating safety and law enforcement services for the purchase of boating safety and law enforcement equipment. Next slide, please. This program is funded with the Recreational Boating Safety, or RBS, federal grant funds issued by the U.S. Coast Guard. The budget varies based on the allocations we receive through the RBS funds. This year's requests totaled $2.5 million, and our budget was $1.56 million. So as you can see, this is a very competitive grant. Examples of equipment that can be purchased include patrol boats, personal watercraft, trailers, electronics, motors, engine repowers, and dive gear. Next slide, please. Okay, so here is a list of all the agencies and awards that were issued in our most recent grant cycle. In the fiscal year 21-22, we have awarded 25 grants for a total of $1.56 million. This included 7 patrol boats, 2 inflatable boats, 2 pairs of personal watercraft, sonar equipment, dive gear, repowers and vessel repairs, search and rescue equipment, and miscellaneous marine patrol equipment. Next slide, please. The application and scoring criteria are continuing to be refined after our last assessment to better assess how the funding requests are going to meet the federal priorities of the RBS grant program under the new application scoring process. The maximum award to any agency cannot exceed 10% of the program's budget. The grant application will be made available through April 29th. DBW will be conducting a workshop on April 5th. This workshop will cover how to apply for a grant, scoring criteria, tips on the application process, reimbursement requests, annual reports, and other requirements of the grant program. The workshop will be conducted via teleconference. And notification of the workshop and grant application will be sent out via press release, emailed to potential applicants, and posted to our website. Next slide, please. Okay, this concludes my presentation. I'm willing to take, my information is up on the screen right now, and I am willing to take any questions you may have. Thank you.
Megan, do we have any questions from the public?
At this time, I'm not seeing any. Yes, no public comments at this time, Mr. Okay. Chair.
Any commissioners with questions or comments? So I'll just add that this grant program is important because it's not uncommon for the counties to cut marine enforcement when the budgets get tight. It's one of the places mm-hmm. they start with. So I think this grant program does a lot for safety.
Yes.
No other comments then. I will thank you, Ms. Naughton, for your presentation.
Okay, thank you.
Now we have Jeffrey Cottle, Aquatic Invasive Plant Control Program.
Good morning, Chairman Ehrman, Commissioners, Deputy Director Fernandez, and Council Tobias. My name is Jeffrey Cottle, the Program Supervisor for the Aquatic Invasive Plant Control Program. Next slide, please. The program history is based off authorizing legislation starting in 1982, Senate Bill 1344, which names the program as the lead agency for monitoring and controlling water hyacinth in the California River Delta, tributaries, and Sassoon Marsh, which I will refer to as the Delta. Assembly Bill 2193 and 1540, signed in 1996 and 2012 respectively, added Agaria densa and sponge plant to the program's target aquatic invasive plants. Assembly Bill 763 added a risk assessment approach by consulting with local, state, and federal agencies with concurrence with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to determine new invasive species that need control. Senate Bill 704 adds a California Conservation Corps partnership to assist with the program personnel needs to help provide personnel resources when needed. The Harbors and Water, the Harbors and Navigation Code 64 and 64.5 authorize and name DBW as the lead agency for controlling aquatic invasive plants in the Delta, with the program annual commitment being $10.3 million. As the lead agency, next slide, please. As the lead agency, DBW AIPCP cooperates with local, state, and federal agencies to manage invasive aquatic plants that are deemed a threat to the environment, economy, and public health. The goals of the program are to detect, identify, control, administer, and manage aquatic invasive plants. As new aquatic invasive plants show up, eradication may be possible through collaborative efforts with other local, state, and federal agencies. Next slide, please. The target species you see here with the date added are the legislative date, or when the program gained approval from CDFW. You'll see that on this slide and the next. Water hyacinth, Egeria densa, and sponge plant were added through legislation, while curly leaf pondweed, coontail, and the others were added as a part of the collaborative process added through Assembly Bill 763. Next slide, please. Alligator weed is already approved as one of our target plants per the previous slide. There are other aquatic invasive plants that will likely appear and be added to the target species for the program in the future. Next slide, please. This is a map of the project area for the AIPCP program, which represents an estimated 101,000 water acres. AIPCP currently collaborates with the counties of Fresno and Merced to help with those southern tributaries in their counties. Next slide, please. Due to the presence of special status species in the program area, there are a significant amount of regulatory requirements the program must meet, including biological opinions with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and National Marine Fisheries Service, compliance with the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permits with the State Water Resources Control Board, amongst many other requirements that are seen here. Next slide, please. There are many beneficiaries with our program at the local, state, and federal levels as seen here. Collaborations with the Department of Water Resources Fish Restoration Program and consistency with the Delta Plan managed by the Delta Stewardship Council, to name some state agencies, while agricultural commissioners, growers, deep water shipping channels, and local businesses such as marinas can benefit at the local level. Next slide, please. The program uses an integrated control strategy consisting of primarily herbicides, along with mechanical harvesting for the removal of water hyacinth, biological control for water hyacinth, physical removal for the floating invasive plants, and hopefully physical controls once all of our regulatory permits are in place in the future. Next slide, please. The program has seen a number of successes with collaborations with which further enhanced the ability of this program. This includes working with a 17-member interagency ecological program that consists of the Department of Water Resources, Fish and Wildlife, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and many other state and federal agencies to better communicate and control aquatic invasive plants in the Delta. The program has also partnered with DWR to help with the goal to restore 8,000 tidal wetland acres with their fish restoration program. This collaboration provides the program with funding of up to $6.5 million a year to help control invasive plants in those areas, which is deposited back into the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. The U.S. Corps of Engineers and Coast Guard are partners to move forward with using physical control methods. And finally, as a part of all of our permit requirements, the collaboration guidelines with other agencies and with the 11 counties in the Delta were drafted up. Next slide, please. While there are many successes, there are a number of challenges as well for the program. There are a large number of stakeholders in the Delta that have differing and sometimes competing expectations, while the regulatory requirements of the program simply add to the challenge. Environmental challenges make every year a different and sometimes unique challenge, while the limited toolset the program can use with restrictions all make managing a 101,000 water acre program area quite challenging. Next slide, please. I'd like to thank you all for your time today.
Okay, now we'll hear public comments.
At this time, Mr. Chair, I am seeing no public comments.
Do we have any comments or questions from the commissioners? Okay, thank you, Jeffrey Caldwell, for your presentation. And now we have Stephanie Pardell for quagga and zebra mussel infestation prevention grants.
Yes, thank you so much. Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair, commissioners, and distinguished guests. My name is Stephanie Pardell, and I am the environmental scientist with the Quagga and Zebra Mussel Infestation Prevention Grant Program, or the QZ Grant Program for short. We award funding to California reservoir owners and managers for the purposes of developing prevention plans and also for implementing activities for infestation prevention. In the previous presentation from Jeff Caudill, you heard about a control program for the Sacramento-San Joaquin River Delta. Our program, on the other hand, is for prevention rather than control, and is statewide for the guiding statutes of our program. Next slide, please. Here's our small but mighty team. We not only oversee the grant, but we also address QZ Muscle Sticker questions from the public. And we also assist our sister agency, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, or CDFW, with other quagga and zebra mussel related issues. So we have Edward Hart, our branch chief, my supervisor, Kara Roderick, myself. We currently have a vacancy in the position previously held by Joan Fine. And then we're also thankful to have our temporary staff, Mike Rodriguez and Chris Dietrich. Next slide, please. Here's the outline for the presentation today. For the first half, we'll be covering mainly an update on our program since the previous commission meeting. And then the second half, I will be going into some background on our program. Next slide, please. The following statute and regulation sections describe the muscle sticker fees and how they will be allocated and used. So our statute is cited here, the Harbors and Navigation Code, Section 675 and 676. And it says that at least 85% of the fees from the muscle sticker is for funding prevention programs at uninfested reservoirs, and up to 15% of muscle sticker fees are for funding CDFW's quagga zebra muscle efforts. Here at the bottom are the DBW regulations, which provide for the collection and use of the biannual statewide QZ prevention fee of $16. And that funding comes from boaters in their purchase of the muscle fee sticker from the DMV. It's then deposited into the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund for our use. Next slide, please. As our state law was inconsistent with the federal law, DBW revised sections of the California Code of Regulations governing the muscle fee sticker, which became effective in 2021. The muscle fee sticker is now a separate transaction from the vessel registration process with the DMV. The DMV created a new URL listed here so boaters could purchase the sticker online directly, but they can also purchase them in person at the DMV field office. Other than the process for purchasing the QZ muscle sticker, there have been no other changes as it's still available from the DMV for $16. Here at the bottom right is just an example of what the current available muscle fee sticker looks like. And just as a note, boaters who exclusively boat in marine or saltwater are exempt from purchasing the sticker. We've updated our website listed here at the bottom to advise boaters about this change. And in addition to this messaging, we have on the next slide, please. We developed an insert which the DMV included in their vessel renewal notices for boaters. It provides background and instructs boaters on how they can now purchase their muscle fee sticker online. This flyer has also been made available for ordering from our warehouse and has also been posted on our website for the public to access. Next slide, please. The funding for our grant program from the muscle sticker has a number of benefits, such as to recreational boaters. Prevention plan implementation costs at reservoirs aren't passed on to the boaters since we cover it. In terms of tourism, preventing infestation keeps the shoreline free of the sharp QZ muscle shells. In terms of infrastructure and operation, if there are no mussels present in a reservoir, they won't have the chance to clog intake structures. And finally, in terms of a healthy ecosystem, as mussels disrupt the ecosystem by outcompeting native mussels and organisms, an uninfested reservoir maintains the food web as well as the reservoir's water quality. And as you know, some reservoirs are used for drinking water, so maintaining the water quality is very important. Next slide, please. Here is a program update for the 2021 grant cycle. Since the last commission meeting, we received 12 applications from 11 applicants. 10 of these projects were funded for a total of $2.9 million awarded. This grant cycle began September 17th, 2021, and will run for 2 years, as all of our grant cycles do, through September 16th, 2023. This image here at the right is a thumbnail of the map for the 2021 grant cycle awards. And this, as well as maps from our previous grant cycles, are available on our website, which will be listed at the end of the presentation. Next slide, please. Since the first grant cycle, we have had 7 years of grant cycles awarding 85 projects, representing 62 unique reservoirs, although some reservoirs have been awarded for multiple grant cycles, and then 42 unique agencies, although again, some have been funded for more than one grant cycle. and that's for a total of $18.9 million awarded. And you have a short briefing paper which breaks down all of these sections for each grant cycle year. Next slide, please. For the new pending grant cycle, 2022, the application window will open on March 7th and will be open for 6 weeks. The QZ team will do three things to market the grant. First, we will conduct a virtual presentation for applicants and any interested parties in March. Notifications such as the solicitation notice will be posted on our website and also distributed with our constant contact notices. We will also produce a press release in March announcing the grant. In terms of application review, DBW, our team, reviews the applications for eligibility and program standards, while our sister agency, CDFW, reviews and scores each project by task. And CDFW also conducts outreach to advertise the grant program as it's a coordinated effort between our two agencies. For the grant term expected, pending available funding, it's late summer or fall 2022 to 2024. Next slide, please. So going into some of the background on our program, here are the list of the eligible applicants. Next slide, please. And these applicants must meet three eligibility requirements in order to be eligible for funding. The first is they must own or manage any aspect of the water in a reservoir. The reservoir must be open to the public for recreation. And finally, it must be uninfested by QZ mussels, as again, this is a prevention and not a control grant. And they must show that they are uninfested at the time of application by providing early detection mussel monitoring data. And then they must continue to demonstrate this throughout the 2-year grant term. Next slide, please. Our program funds two different types of projects, the first being Tier 1 or planning and assessment projects. And these are for the development or revision of a CDFW accepted prevention plan to bring it up to CDFW's regulations. Here's just a few of the requirements that we have for these grants and for a max funding of $200,000. Next slide, please. And here's the second type of projects, the Tier 2 or implementation projects. These must already have a CDFW accepted prevention plan in place in order to be eligible for the Tier 2. Here's some of our requirements for these grants for a max funding of $400,000. Next slide, please. And here are some visual examples of some projects that we have funded in the past. So on the left, in the canopy, underneath in the back, you can see a decontamination unit, which we have funded. And then up front, there is a hydropad, which we have also funded. And that collects the runoff water when a boat is being decontaminated. The program not only reimburses for equipment, but also for staff time, as you can see on the right here. So you can see on the right is an example of an inspector at Lake Berryessa in Solano County who's decontaminating the ballast tanks of a boat. In addition to these tasks, Tier 2 projects can include inspection canines for the detection of adult mussels, early detection mussel monitoring or water chemistry monitoring, and outreach, as we will discuss on the next slide. Our grant requires Tier 2 grantees to attend outreach events, as educating the public is very important for preventing the spread of QZ mussels. Here in the picture on the right, you can see an example of a pop-up outreach display from Clear Lake with a canopy and panels providing information about QZ mussels to the public. Additional outreach examples could include community events, informational signage that's displayed at the reservoir, public service announcements or media buys, and finally, any handouts or brochures that could be distributed either at the reservoir or at community events. And as you can imagine, virtual outreach has become much more important due to COVID restrictions. Next slide, please. Now I'd like to give you a little background on the biology of the mussel. For brevity, I'll summarize this information, but please feel free to ask any questions if you'd like to delve into any of this any further. For this presentation's purposes, quagga and zebra mussels are very similar to each other. They are both small freshwater mussels that attach to both hard and soft surfaces with bissel threads. They have subtle morphological differences, but their biology and their alarming implications for U.S. water bodies are essentially identical. They are non-native and invasive mussels that were introduced into the United States in the 1980s, and it's thought that they were likely, they were brought in the ballast water of ocean-going ships. And then quagga mussels were first thought to be introduced into California, in Southern California, in 2007. And that was from the lower Colorado River, which was already known to be infested. Zebra mussels were later found in California in 2008. And we do want to point out that we mostly have quagga mussels in California. QZ mussels reproduce very quickly, as females can produce up to 1 million eggs per year. Their larvae, called veligers, are free drifting in water, which is why it's so important for the compartments and ballast tanks of a boat to be clean, drained, and dried so that these veligers aren't conveyed from one reservoir to another. In the US, we don't have native predators that would reduce the mussel population, and therefore they fare much better and outcompete our native mussels and other small organisms. And they're spread by waterways and aqueducts, commercial ships, and our recreational boats. Next slide, please. Now I want to go into some of the effects of QZ mussels. First off, addressing recreational effects. They increase decontamination needs. They damage boating equipment of any boaters visiting the reservoir, as mussels adhering to boat holes can lead to engine malfunctions. And finally, for recreation, they ruin the natural recreational sites. So as you can see on this picture on the right here, the mussel shells have fully taken over the shoreline of an infested reservoir in Kansas. The mussel shells are sharp and can cut people, which makes it unsafe for visitors to walk a beach of an infested reservoir. And also, these mussels negatively affect the ecological integrity of our waterways. So quagga and zebra mussels kill native freshwater mussels not only by attaching to the shells of our native species, but also by outcompeting them and other filter-feeding invertebrates for food. As a secondary effect, once the ecosystem is altered, there's an increased risk of aquatic invasive weeds or algae growth. The high mussel populations can increase water acidity and decrease concentrations of dissolved oxygen in the water body. And finally, it can lead to a reduced or altered sport fish population, not only by affecting the food chain and the water quality, but also by taking over fish spawning grounds. Next slide, please. Moving on to the infrastructural effects of QZ mussels. Mussels clog the intake structures, as you can see on the picture on the left here, such as the pipes and pumping machinery. So that increased maintenance costs. It may call for the need to scrape or replace pipes, screens, and docks. And in extreme cases, it may even call for a backup or replacement system. These mussels also affect California's water supply. It affects our ability to enact flood control procedures and also our ability to generate power. Next slide, please. I want to wrap up talking about a few of the risk factors for mussel introduction that must be considered for each reservoir. The full list is here, but I'll just highlight a few. So one is whether the reservoir is currently implementing a prevention plan. They're at a much higher risk if they do not currently have a plan in place. Water chemistry and substrate availability. So for example, a higher calcium level puts a reservoir at a higher risk of mussel establishment, as it allows them to better complete the life cycle and incorporate that calcium into their shells. The usage of live bait by fishers and the number of boaters that visit a reservoir. The proximity of a reservoir to a QZ-infested waterway somewhere else. So that would increase the chance that a boater would visit one and then visit another and could possibly convey veligers from one to the other. And the last one that I want to highlight is the water intake and flow into the watershed. So for example, if a reservoir upstream is infested, the water body downstream is at a much higher risk as well. Here on the right, you can see a map. This is the map that CDFW maintains of infested water bodies in California. This map is also available on our website, and it's also an attachment in your briefing that I mentioned previously. There are currently 44 locations in California, with the most northern location in San Benito County, and only a small percentage of our reservoirs are infested, so there are still very many to protect. And we do want to acknowledge that in August of 2021, there was a new detection of adult mussels at Castaic Lake in Southern California. Castaic is a reservoir downstream of Pyramid Lake, which is known to have had quagga mussels since 2016. Management actions have already begun to control the mussels within both water bodies, and routine monitoring is currently being performed by the Department of Water Resources and CDFW. and they have yet to detect any villagers in the reservoir. Additionally, the Department of Water Resources is implementing a containment program to prevent the movement of mussels. This case highlights how Kizzy mussels are still a threat that we need to actively prevent in California, and it also illustrates that last risk factor that I mentioned, where being downstream of an infested reservoir means that you are at a much higher risk for a detection of Kizzy mussels. Next slide, please. Here is the contact information for our team, my supervisor, myself, and then also our general team email, as well as the website that I've been mentioning throughout the presentation. Next slide, please. We'd just like to leave off with our clean, drain, dry message, and I am happy to take any questions you may have.
And do we have anybody registered for a public question or comment?
At this time, Mr. Chair, I am seeing no public comments.
Do we have any questions or comments from commissioners?
Oh, you know, I'm sorry. I am seeing a hand raised. I'm going to go ahead and unmute them. Apologies if I mispronounce your last name. Bill Chrysler, you should be on the call.
Unmute. Does that work?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you very much. My name is Bill Chrysler. I'm a member of the board of the Treasure Island Saline Association. I assume some of you, if not all of you, are somewhat familiar with what we're trying to do there. And you've helped us in the past with some equipment grants. We're continuing to grow. I just wanted to introduce myself and to let you know that I've been asked to attend your meetings on behalf of TISC, and to hopefully find avenues where we can collaborate and help each other towards what our, I think, in many ways, mutual mission is. We have introduced some new programs that, such as a STEM program, which I think maybe you've heard of, but if not, it's a fourth grade school kids that we're bringing over to Treasure Island to teach how to sail. It's really pretty exciting. I've only been involved on the board for the last 3 or 4 years, but we've been in business it's a nonprofit, but we've been there since 1998. The city of San Francisco has granted us a lease now, a long-term lease for our property. So instead of temporary squatters facilities, we're planning for a significant amount of growth over the next few years. And I think the lease is for 60 years or something. So we're pretty excited about the fact that we've got this incredibly ideal location to expose people to the waterways and to teach them safe boating, sustainability, environmental stewardship of the waterways, and to make that available to the broader community. That's really all I wanted to say, other than to thank you again for your work and look forward to finding paths where we can collaborate in the future.
Thank you. Do we have any others, Megan?
At this time, I am not seeing any other hands raised.
So I will ask any commissioners with questions or comments.
Mr. Chair, briefly, first of all, I want to commend Stephanie on a fantastic presentation. Very comprehensive, answered a lot of questions I have. One thing I asked this on our last commission meeting that I'm not clear on is eradication. So I understand prevention. I'm not really clear on eradication. So it seems to me that this is a problem. It's like once you have it, it's like, you know, it's like diabetes, right? You know, you can treat it, but you're never going to cure it. But you mentioned at some point in your presentation, like, so you have this downflow from Pyramid Lake down to Castaic. Well, we're detecting it. I mean, isn't that just, I'm just to educate me. What I want to understand is, doesn't it just kind of mean game over for Castaic? Now it has it, and that's just the way it is? Or there's no, I guess, scientific, biological I mean, I understand there's probably a physical remediation program you can do to deal with this, but so that's you understand my question?
Yeah.
When you have it, what do you do with it, right?
Right. There's really no effective treatments, especially for the size of our reservoirs. There, I think there's one situation where they were able to eradicate it, but it was in a very, very, it was in a quarry. So it was in a much smaller area, and it was not, it wasn't something that we could do here in California. Based on all of the tools at our disposal, there haven't been any larger scale successes in removing quagga zebra mussels from a reservoir. It's really many of the things that I've heard of that other states have been trying are not available to us here in California. One of the situations or one of the solutions possible is completely draining the water body and leaving it to be drained for a long period of time until the mussels die off. And that's not really feasible for our reservoirs. And, you know, a lot of them are used as drinking water. So what would you do with the all of those people who would be out of drinking water in that situation? And you know, other places have used potash, which isn't a federally registered pesticide. So it affects other areas of the food web. So ecologically, that's not a very viable situation for us here. There are preliminary discussions about using mussel gene mutations, actually, and researchers in the Western states in the Western Regional Panel on the Aquatic Nuisance Species, they're talking about it, but there haven't been any studies to show whether that would be effective or kind of any other ecological or other downstream effects that may happen if we were to institute that.
Good, thank you. And I'll just note for the commission that Stephanie raised this issue just of downstream water users, water utility districts, drinking water, et cetera, who benefit from, you know, Department of Boating and Waterways remediation efforts or preventive efforts on this matter. So I just, you know, this is part of my program subcommittee, that so I'm very sensitive to this. But thank you very much, Stephanie, and thanks everyone else for your time.
Thank you.
Any other commissioner comments or questions? Okay, thank you, Stephanie Pardell, for your presentation. Our next agenda item is public comment period for non-agenda items. So at this time, we will hear public comments on items not on the agenda. Each member of the public will have 3 minutes to make his or her comments. After hearing all public comments, we will continue the meeting with agenda items number 10, administrative items. So Megan, do we have anyone registered or on the call for non-agenda public comments?
Mr. Chair, at this time, I am seeing no one raising their hand and no one is registered to make a public comment. I don't believe anyone is dialing in by phone, but just in case, it's *9 to raise your hand. Just give folks a few more seconds here. I am seeing no hands raised.
Okay, then I will formally close the public comment section. And we'll move on to our next agenda item, which is election of officers for 2022. So we will start with chair. Do we have any nominations for chair?
I'll nominate Chair Ehrman for chair.
Okay.
I'll second that.
Any other nominations? So with that, I will just call for a vote for the nomination. All in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. Okay, I thank you for that. I appreciate the opportunity to be the chair. And next, I will call for nominations for vice chair.
Well, I'll nominate the current Vice Chair Hawkins.
Second.
Do we have any other nominations? So I will ask all in favor of the nomination, say aye.
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 Those opposed? Congratulations, Vice Chair Hawkins. You will be serving for another term with me, and I appreciate that.
Thanks, everyone. Appreciate it.
So now we'll move on. Suggested agenda items for our next meeting. Any suggested agenda items? I believe there was one recommendation for a deeper dive into the budget. Okay, if no suggestions for agenda items, I will adjourn this meeting.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you guys all for participating, and those who participated via Zoom as well from the audience. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, everyone. Good to see everyone.
Bye.
Ramona, real quickly before you go, I didn't hit the date that you talked about, the commission training dates.
March 17th and 21st.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I can send an email out, Ramona.
A reminder, yes.
Yeah.
It will be virtual, so.
And that is just, that is a pro forma kind of check the box training type of thing. Is that, I mean, what's the time commitment? I'm just trying to get my head around it.
Gosh, I don't recall, Chair, the public commissioner Peer. I want to say it's 2 hours?
Well, it's very close. When I took it recently, it was 2 hours, yeah.
I would say it's about 2 hours, too. And it is, I think, personally, it's a good, all of our trainings are pretty good. They've been doing them several years. So they're updated regularly. And I found that they come in handy for other, you know, things that you volunteer with and stuff. So so I endorse them.
All right.
And that's either or, correct? 17th or 21st?
Correct, yes.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Everyone be safe.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much.
Yes, everyone. Thank you, Bob and Travis.
Welcome. Have a nice day.
You too.